I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome back to Radio Times. When I was in my early 40s, I played in a co-ed soccer league for a few years. And for 90 minutes on a Saturday or Sunday morning, the only thing that I thought about was what was happening on that soccer field. Now, I wasn't a particularly good player, but I enjoyed the camaraderie and the competition and being part of a sports team, like when I was a kid. It's so easy as an adult to forget how much fun team sports can be. So with summer approaching, it's the perfect time to get back into the game. You can join one of the many recreational leagues in the Philadelphia area, playing volleyball, soccer, basketball, baseball, dodgeball, kickball. There's a lot to choose from. This hour, we talk about the growing Rec Sports Association in our area, and we have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Jason Cooper, director and co-founder of the Philadelphia Sports Network. And Jason, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Dan Feeney is with us as well, COO of the Philadelphia Sport and Social. And Dan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Yeah, good to be here.
Nice to have you both here. And to our listeners, we especially want to hear from you if you're playing on a sports league or on an adult sports team, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So, Jason, this is about almost 10 years ago. Why did you found or co-found the Philadelphia Sport Network?
Well, I moved here from Boston, and I was working as an architect. One of my buddies at the architecture firm, we were trying to find a place to play basketball. We looked all over Center City. We really didn't find anything that worked for us, so we started our own league. And Basketball in the beginning, and before you know it, it just took off. We were getting emails after emails from people wanting to sign up, and 9 years later, we're, you know, we do 15 different sports, and it's awesome.
So right time, right place, perhaps right age as well. When we talk about people playing adult sports on a team, are we talking what, 30s and 40s, people those ages?
Yeah, it's
maybe 20s.
20s, too? Yep. Probably the target age for our group, it's probably mid to late 20s. But we have people that play all the way up until their 60s and 70s as well, depending on the sport.
Good to know. How about for you, Dan? Now, the Philadelphia Sport and Social, interesting, it's called Sport and Social. We'll get to the social part of it. That's been around for, what, more than 20 years, right?
Yeah, it started in 1993. It originally started as just four football teams playing in Fairmont Park. And our football was really the base of it back then, and eventually the football grew and grew, and for a lot of time it was mostly just football, softball, soccer, kind of the main core sports. And then I got involved about 8 years ago, and kind of the same time Jason came into the game, and we kind of expanded to a lot of other sports because we found that some of these very competitive sports were not what everybody else was looking for. Some people were just looking just to have fun and just to play, and they didn't want that competitive nature.
How important, then, is the social part of these kinds of teams and sports?
It's one of the most important things. The majority of our leagues and the majority of our participants really are just there to have fun. And that's, those are the participants we really cherish. They go, they don't care if they win or lose. They're just there to meet new people, have fun, maybe go out to the bar after the game and have a beer, and that's their Thursday night or Saturday afternoon or whatever it is.
Same for your group, Jason, the social part?
Yeah, we have a strong social component to the leagues. Afterwards, we have a sponsor bar that's associated with each league. Players are welcome to go, get specials. We really want to do all we can to encourage people to get to know more people. The competitive aspect of the leagues is it really depends on the sport. Some
right.
sports are much more competitive than others.
Such as?
I would say basketball, soccer, volleyball. Those are the big ones. But even the sports that are you wouldn't think are that competitive, dodgeball, kickball, there's some people that really
And they know who they are, right?
It's almost like they're a full-time job sometimes.
Do you have to manage something like that? That someone that just brings almost too much competition or too much seriousness to the game?
Sometimes. But for the most part, I think people understand that these are, you know, people want to have fun after work. It's a recreational environment. And at the end of every game, I mean, people are shaking hands and going out with each other, sharing a drink.
Well, I mentioned the fact that I played co-ed soccer. I mean, this was 25 years ago, so it was a long time ago. And one of the things that I found so interesting, especially playing with men, is how men and women compete, and I think compete a little differently. And what I observed was on the field, it was all out, just men played, you know, from start to finish, and then they were done. It was over. And I have to say, maybe this is more about me than about women, but I held grudges about things that were done on that field. I still have grudges about things that were that happened on that field. And I don't know if that's how women compete or whether that was sort of the early days of men and women competing together. But it was really interesting to watch that.
Yeah, it really is.
This is Dan.
I think there's a couple of issues there. And I think that, you know, we always say that some of the best teams always have the women who are very good at the sports. Those are the teams that usually excel and do really well. But sometimes the women take it more competitive than the men.
I know. It's interesting, isn't it?
But it's, you know, it gets back to a lot of the sports, some are more than others. And especially soccer is a good example of that, of, you know, it gets a little more competitive and the juices get going and sometimes it gets
things
a little
happen.
Too competitive.
You want to add to that, Jason?
Regarding the women, the thing that was really interesting for us is we started out doing men's basketball. And one of the things we really wanted to do early on was create a women's basketball league, which was kind of unheard of at the time. There wasn't any competition for it. And it took years and years of just trying to get it off the ground. And now we have a really strong organization for women's basketball. And I mean, these ladies, a lot of them played in college, and they're killing it. They're amazing, and it's so rewarding to see that we've created a place that they can come, you know, after college or after high school and play.
Do you find that the people that play in these leagues that they played maybe on a team, maybe they were really good as an athlete coming up through school and maybe even to college, and then, you know, life happens, you get a job, you settle down, things happen, and then all of a sudden they get this hankering. I'm looking at you, Jason, get this hankering for that thing they did in high school or even before then?
Definitely. I think everybody is looking for an outlet. You know, work is work, and people need something to do after work. And some people haven't played in maybe 5, 10 or more years, and some people have always played. So it's a real mix. And it's fun to see, but people, we try our best with our organization to balance teams, balance the competition level. So whether you've played every year of your life or you haven't played in 20 years,
right.
You know, you want to feel comfortable.
And you want to feel like you can, instead of 87-0, it might be something more evenly matched.
Yeah, and the more leagues that you can have for each sport, the more divisions you can have, so you can have different competition levels.
Dan, you want to add to that?
No, I mean, yeah, we do the same thing. You know, it is hard sometimes with the mixture of levels of competitiveness where we have, you know, there's some fields we can only handle so many teams, and there are some teams who are all people who played in college versus a team sometimes that really doesn't have any experience. And that ends up being unfortunate sometimes because it's not fun for either of those teams to play each other. So we do our best to try to mix it up. And, you know, in the next year or two, we're hoping to have more levels so that we can point people in the right direction and try to get people placed accordingly. But yeah, I think it's pretty similar.
Do you think this is being driven by millennials, you know, that age group, the early 20s into the very, very early 30s? Is that the driver behind this, do you think, Dan?
Yes, I think so. I think there's a lot of, you know, that 25-year-old, you know, is in my experience, is gravitating more to these social sports, kickball, and whether it's cornhole or dodgeball, they're gravitating.
Cornhole,
like bean bags you play in the backyard barbecue.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So, you know, we have leagues for that, actually. But, you know, we've seen kickball rise enormously in the last 5 years, where 5 years ago we had, you know, four teams playing, and now in a given week we'll have 120 kickball teams playing, you know. And I think it's that social aspect of meeting new people, meeting guys and girls, you know, playing with your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever it may be. That's really fun. You know, when I got out of college, me and my wife, we've played softball together. We played volleyball together. We played basketball together. So that's a great way to meet new people. And, you know, a lot of romances get struck up because of that.
Yeah. And Jason, again, you want to add to that as well? And I'm thinking about workplace teams. I don't know how organized they are, but certainly there are people in this building that play on teams.
Yeah, we have offices from all over the city that want to get involved. For them, it's usually the more recreational sports that it's a perfect fit. They want to play kickball or softball. But like Dan said, I think the only thing I wanted to add to what he said is I think the internet has changed things a lot too. Because when we first started, which wasn't that long ago, you know, we were pretty much like collecting payments and everything by check and doing things by mail. And now things are evolved so much, it makes it so easy to connect to people and get people involved. And I think on the flip side, people, it's easier for them to find something to do.
Do you have referees? Is that important to have, Dan?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without them, you don't have a business, really. They are our organizers. We can't, you know, we'll have 10, 15 leagues running a night. We are full-timers. We have, you know, myself, we have four full-timers. We can't be in all those places. So, mm-hmm. You know, we rely heavily on our refs and staff. And, you know, they're our eyes and ears on the ground a lot of times. So that's important.
Refs important. Referees are important, Jason.
Oh yeah, I mean we have over 100 referees,
wow.
And just managing them is a full time job in itself. But like Dan said, they are our eyes and ears out there. They are the people that make it all happen. And you know, having a good ref or a bad ref can be the difference of someone having a good experience out there.
And eyes and ears, just sort of what's happening at a particular game on a field, watching who's doing what to whom.
Yeah,
like
and something interesting we did is we have taken some of our best players and people that are really passionate about what we do and gotten them involved beyond refs into commissioners.
Uh-huh.
And they have like another role where they're helping to oversee, start up the leagues, and be kind of the liaison between the players and us. And they help to generate new ideas, answer questions to players. They're really, it's kind of that extra mile that we need.
Well, we are talking about recreational leagues here in the Delaware Valley for adults. That's Jason Cooper, director and co-founder of the Philadelphia Sports Network. Also with us, Dan Feeney, COO of Philadelphia Sport and Social. And we have calls and comments coming in, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Call us at 1-888-477-9499. And after this break, pickleball. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Until last week, I had never heard of pickleball, apparently the fastest growing sport in the nation. It's particularly popular with the more mature, the older athlete, and it combines the skills and rules of several net sports, as I understand it. Joining us now is Denise Donald, District Ambassador of the USA Pickleball Association, and she will fill us in on this addictive new sport. And Denise Donald, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So let's start with the name. Who named it pickleball?
Okay. In 1965, Joel Pritchard, later became a congressman in Washington, developed this game in his driveway. They came home, were looking for something to do. They lowered a badminton net, made a couple paddles out of plywood, used a wiffle ball, and started pickleball. It's been around since 1965. We're just really starting to hear about it here. It hit the senior market about 2008, and it exploded.
But why pickleball? I don't want to get stuck on the name here, but I don't understand.
The name. There's two stories to the name.
Okay.
The most popular story and the fun story is that they had a dog named Pickles, and Pickles used to run off with the ball. They say that they didn't get the dog for a couple of years after they invented the game,
okay.
So I'm not too sure about that one.
Right.
Then there's a pickle boat, which is the last boat that goes out on the river, and it's made up of members of different teams. So since it's made up of a little bit of badminton, a little bit of ping pong, a little bit of tennis, the pickle boat.
There are the two stories. I got you. And it sounds like the better one might be a better explanation. So what? It's a mix of tennis, ping pong, badminton, what else?
Right. You have a paddle, like a ping pong paddle, a little larger. You have a perforated ball like a wiffle ball, and you play over a tennis net that's a little lower, 34 inches instead of 36, and it's a badminton-sized court. So you have the aspects of the different sports in there. The serve is different because you're serving underhand.
Right.
It's a little bit of all the different sports. If you have any kind of paddle sport, you'll pick it up in no time.
Well, and this seems to be popular or more popular with older players. Why is that?
Well, it's fun. It's fun. It's social. It's competitive. It's easy to learn. Anybody can play. I have a player, the oldest player I have is 83 years old.
Wow.
And it's just so much fun. I mean, you can come into this at a later age and learn a sport. We have people with heart attacks and strokes and hip replacements and knee replacements, and they can still get out there on the court, run around, have fun. They're getting cardio. They're building their bone mass. They lose weight, hand-eye coordination. They're learning something new.
Which is important as you get older.
Exactly.
And Denise, sounds like you're a player.
I am. I learned about 5 years ago, and I was addicted after the first day.
And just because it's fun and all the things that you just described?
Yeah, and you can play inside. You can play outside. You're out here on the tennis courts, which are now becoming pickleball courts. The townships are doing dual lines as they resurface them so that you can play either sport on them. Senior communities are building courts as they, the members are older in the 55-plus communities. I have two places this week that have asked me to come out and do demos for them. Cherry Hill is building three courts right now, just dedicated pickleball courts. We're having a hard time keeping up with the popularity.
Well, that's
We're inside. We're inside on basketball courts and hockey rinks. Outside, we're on tennis courts, and they're converting places. As townships find places that are not being used, they're finding a new use for them. And we're filling up all these places. There are so many places in Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey to play.
Well, let me get our other two guests back in on the conversation. Dan Feeney, COO of Philadelphia Sport and Social, and Jason Cooper, director and co-founder of the Philadelphia Sports Network. Dan, are you open to pickleball?
Yeah. I mean, I've actually played pickleball. I played when I was in high school. So
did
that
you
was,
really? How did
yeah.
that happen?
It used to be a sport we played in high school, and mm-hmm. It's fun. That was 15 years ago. So, I mean, it's been around for a while. We would definitely be interested in doing something.
You're going to add pickleball to your repertoire, Jason?
Yeah, we would definitely consider it. When we first started out, we were doing mostly large team-based sports. Since then, we've gotten involved with – we do a lot of tennis now at Penn. And we do quite a bit of we do bowling, and we're starting to think about doing ping pong. So this would fit pretty nicely.
Well, let me get Rosemary from Balakimwa to join us on Radio Times. Rosemary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Hello, Denise. I know you know me, and I know you. We started pretty much close to the same time in 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons for this tremendous increase in numbers of people is that the boomers is a big population, and now the boomers' kids and their grandkids. I've seen kids as young play with even the seniors as young as 10 or 11 years old.
And this is pickleball, obviously, Rosemary.
Yes.
Yes, I have an 11-year-old, and I have a wheelchair player. The sport is for anyone.
Yep.
Anyone can learn this sport.
Anyone. And it is I'm 69 years old. I started 5 years ago. I had never really played anything, nothing except a little bit of tennis once in a while in every, you know, maybe 10 years. So it is tremendously fun, and the people playing, the whole level of play has become much more competitive, so that not only are the levels from one, which is just starting and you don't know how to use rackets very well, to as much as five plus, and you can find the level with maybe there's at least probably 10 to 15 places to play, and that may be low because it's changing every week in the tri-state area.
Well, Rosemary, I really appreciate your call to Radio Times. Denise, sounds like you not only know each other, but kindred spirits when it comes to pickleball, yes? Denise?
True. I would like to point out, if anybody is looking to play pickleball, on usapa.org, they can look and find a place to play. Each state is listed, and there's multiple for each one of these states here in the tri-state area. If they can't find a place locally, they can look under the ambassadors and contact the ambassador and ask them where pickleball is being played. And I wanted to mention, too, that it's not so much a league when you're playing pickleball. Pickleball is four people on it, usually. You can play singles, but usually everyone plays doubles. So we tend to do winners stay and split and losers sit. Two people come in off the bench. So you're constantly playing with someone different. We don't necessarily have a league, but we have what we call meetups or sign up where you can have 25 people, 35 people, 50 people come, and you're playing with someone different all the time. So as you have these different courts, you have different levels. You've got beginners over here and intermediates over here and advanced over there. So there is a place for everybody on the court.
Well, that's good to know. Let me just quickly give out that phone number to our listeners. We are talking about recreational team sports, some of them leagues. We're also learning about pickleball. And again, Dan Feeney, Jason Cooper, and Denise Donald, our guests on Radio Times. And we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. If you have discovered or perhaps rediscovered a sport that you played in high school or perhaps in college, call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read an email from Seahorse Rider. Seahorse Rider says, "Hi, Dan." That's to you, Dan. When I lived in Boston, their social sports league had an awesome inner tube water polo league that was a ton of aquatic fun. How can we make this happen in Philadelphia? We can't let Boston have more fun than us. You're on, Dan.
So I am familiar with that, and I know the owners up there of Social Boston Sports. Justin's a good friend of mine, and I talked to him a number of years ago about bringing that, and we were just having a conversation. Me and Jason both have said at times we've tried to get that started, and I think that's something we would definitely love to do. It's a great sport. There's a lot of pools that are unused that we could take advantage of. And it's just, I think that people don't know about it is the biggest thing.
Well, I've never heard of inner tube water polo, so
it's
like fun. Pickleball,
right? I've seen it played. It is very fun.
Here's a tweet from April. I'll toss this to you, Jason. She says, "Fairmount Park's Women's Softball League is one of the few all-women leagues in the city, and it's been around for about 20 years. Do you know this group?"
I'm not aware of it. I think that's awesome. I mean, just like I said, with the women's basketball, yeah. Any opportunities out there where women can play like that, I think that's awesome.
Denise, I was reading about pickleball, and there's a kind of language that goes along with it. Picklers, to pickle, to be pickled. What else? What else do we need to know about the language of pickleball?
Well, there's a kitchen.
Yeah, what's that?
The kitchen is a 7-foot no-volley zone right in front of the net. So unlike tennis, where you can charge the net and smash, you can't do that in pickleball. That's another reason, I guess, the older patients, the older players like it.
You gave yourself away there. Yeah, no, go ahead, Denise.
Yeah, if the ball goes in the kitchen, you go in and you can get it on a bounce and send it back over the net, but you can't smash it at somebody's face from that 7 foot before the net.
Let me get Bennett from King of Prussia to join us. Hi, Bennett. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I actually know both Rosemary and Denise, too. Okay. So, and one of my friends actually just texted me and said, hey, they're talking about pickleball. So I wanted to also give my perspective on it, too. So I'm one of the younger players of pickleball, and that's one of the things that I wanted to talk about is that whenever there's news coverage or whenever, whenever there's any type of radio talks about it, they always talk about pickleball being like, you know, it's geared more towards older players, but it's also but also several younger players, especially in the tournament scene. And I'm one of the tournament players. We also play pickleball too, and most of us are actually most of us have that tennis background or some type of racket sports background too. And yeah, pickleball is not just for the older players. So a lot of the younger players, especially when you get matched up with three other players at the same level, it's a whole new game, and it's very, very addictive too. And so that's what I wanted to talk about. That just for the older players.
No, you did, Ben, and yes. I appreciate it. And I should say he's 35 years old, just to kind of underscore his call to Radio Times. Let me put something else out there, and Jason, let me toss this to you about things like safety and injuries. And if we're talking about soccer or some of these more competitive sports or sports where people can bump into each other or crash into each other, how much is that an issue?
I mean, it's an issue. There's always liability involved. Everybody knows that when they get involved, you could get hurt. Soccer is probably the number one sport with injuries. That was something
more than basketball or more than.
Yeah. I think that was clear to me when we got our league insurance, and that we had actually take out a separate policy because soccer is so expensive. But yeah, it's unfortunate people get hurt. I think, which I think you're talking about later on in the show, is stretching and being prepared to play. A lot of people, I think, myself included, you kind of think you're invincible. You go out there and, oh, yeah, I probably should have stretched.
I'm not 17 anymore,
yes.
Right? Something like that. Dan, how much is that an issue for the people to play with your organization?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is an issue. I mean, we always hate to hear it. You know, people get injured, and, you know, we have injury reports that our staff on site does. And, you know, unfortunately, it comes up, and I think it is a lot of time, like Jason said. It's people, you know, they're running from work, they're going straight to the field, and then the game starts, and they're in, you know, run it going from 0 to 60 right immediately. And like we said, I know myself, I've, you know, pulled muscles and stuff like that. Fortunately, knock on wood, I haven't had any serious injuries. But every once in a while we do.
Denise, is that an issue for pickleball?
It is. Can I touch on Bennett's comment for 1 second?
Absolutely.
Bennett was talking about tournaments, and there are tournaments for players. We have a regional tournament in Maine coming up in next month where it's over 400 players coming. There are Senior Olympics in Woodbridge, New Jersey, and in, I think it's York, Pennsylvania, where they qualify for the Senior Olympics. It's one of the events in there. Wow. And this Friday on CBS Sports, they're going to air footage from the U.S. Open, the very first U.S. Open. Friday at 7 o'clock. So if anybody has never seen pickleball, that would be a good time to tune in. As far as injuries go, we didn't really have many injuries for 4 years.
Well, that's
and
good to
recently,
know.
With the explosion and a lot of beginners, we've had a few Achilles and wrists and things happen. So we're getting more attuned to having them stretch, walk, not so much stretch, but like do arm circles and like lunges and move their body first and get their muscles warm before they get on the court, because it's like they say, like a cold piece of elastic when you get out there and you need to move first.
It's so depressing, isn't it, when you think about it that way.
And
we're almost out of time here. We will be talking about stretching, or in some cases not stretching, or how to do it correctly. But Jason, are there some championships as the season ends where you've got teams playing each other for the trophy, stuff like that?
Yeah, we play 6 seasons a year, so we're playing year-round. And every season you have a playoff and there's a champion.
What does a champion get?
The champion, we give out championship medals. We also, with our partner sponsor bars, we always set up where they will get a free happy hour. And that's pretty much what people want. They want to go
the free happy
and get,
hour.
Get the beer. Yeah.
And how about for you, Dan?
We have playoffs for all of our sports, and we have these championship long sleeve shirts that people get every season. And we have people who it would seem like that long sleeve championship shirt was worth a lot more than it actually is.
Just the honor of, yes, wearing something
right.
like
yeah,
that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And is there sort of a downtime for you, or is this a pretty much 24/7, 365?
Yeah, we play year round. I mean, the one nice thing for us is that we typically don't play when people are on vacation. So times like Thanksgiving, Christmas, 4th of July, we usually take off because everybody else wants to take off. Right. So it's nice to have that family time for us, to be able to take those days off. And I know a lot of people do have to work those days, so it's nice to have that little downtime just on those holidays. But that's about it.
Other than that, it sort of goes year-round. Yeah. Same for you, Jason?
Yep. It's nonstop. You're always – there's always a league. There's always games going on almost every night, tons of teams playing. But like Dan said, it's definitely nice when you get to those holidays and –
Give everyone
a little rest. Give those fields a little rest.
And Denise, we're almost out of time here. This is pretty much a year-round thing, pickleball?
Oh, yeah. There's every day, twice a day, there's a place to play. Even if there's not a place to play, you'll get a text from a couple players saying, hey, you want to play today? It only takes four people. So it's easy to get four people together to get out there.
Well, you are a good ambassador for pickleball. Denise Donald, thanks so much for joining us today, Radio Times.
Thank you.
District Ambassador for the USA Pickleball Association, Dan Feeney, COO of Philadelphia Sport and Social, thank you for joining us. And Jason Cooper, Director and Co-Founder of the Philadelphia Sports Network, thank you, Jason, for joining us as well.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. And after this very short break, stretching. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, and we've been talking about adults playing in sports leagues, playing recreational sports. But before you get out on the field or on the court, should you stretch or not? And believe it or not, the subject has been hotly debated. We asked Mal McHugh to join us. He's director of research at the Nicholas Institute of Sports Medicine and Athletic Trauma, and that's at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City. And nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, 1-888-477-9499, the number to call to join our conversation. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And yes, we are talking about to stretch or not to stretch. Mel McHugh, I always thought everyone should stretch before they play some kind of a sport. Whether they do or not, that's a whole different question. But is that true?
Not necessarily. So some athletes and sports participants do need to stretch if they are at risk of sustaining a muscle strain injury in their particular sport. Then they should probably stretch beforehand. Endurance athletes like cyclists, long distance runners, they're not at a very high risk of straining a muscle during their exercise, and they shouldn't stretch beforehand. And if you look at the elite long distance runners, very few of them ever stretch. So they've probably learned by experience that they don't need to. They need to warm up, of course, and do other metabolic activities to make sure they're ready to go when they want to go at their race pace if they're racing. But they don't necessarily need to stretch. Soccer players, for example, would need to stretch because they're at increased risk of straining hamstrings, groin muscles, hip flexors. So they should go through a pre-sports stretching routine.
I have to confess, as someone who plays tennis, sometimes I stretch, sometimes I don't stretch. If what does the stretching do? And is it just a matter of getting those muscles, those tendons loosened up so that you're not going to hurt yourself?
Yes, you want to make them a little bit more pliable. So if you're playing tennis, actually a calf strain, a medial gastroc strain, is often referred to as a tennis leg because it's a common injury when you go to push forward to get a ball, like if someone plays a drop shot to you and you go to sprint forward, when that initial push off, there is a slight risk of straining your calf muscle when you do that. And by stretching beforehand, you make the muscle a little bit more compliant so that it there's less stiffness in the muscle when you apply a sudden stretch to it. And that probably reduces the risk of you sustaining a muscle strain.
And how long should someone be stretching those muscles?
Well, see, the thing that I see most is that people don't stretch enough. So they don't spend enough time stretching before their activity. Doing 2 minutes is not good enough.
No.
You should probably do somewhere between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on how many muscles that you need to stretch. If you're just stretching your calves, you probably want to do about 3 or 4 minutes on each side. If you're playing a sport where you want to stretch your calves, your hamstrings, your hip flexors, your adductors, you should probably spend about 10 minutes of stretching. And then when you finish the stretching, you shouldn't go straight into competition, meaning straight into high intensity, the way you would play in the game situation. You should probably go through then some pre-game practices, like if it's tennis, to hit the ball around a little bit more before you go into play, or if it's a game situation, typically people will do a jogging warm-up, then they're stretching, and then do some practice drills, and then start the actual game performance.
You mentioned hamstring, and boy, you know, you do hear about hamstring injuries. Is that a particularly vulnerable part of our body?
Yeah, any speed sport that involves sprinting, stopping and starting, like most of the forms of football, American football, soccer, rugby, the most common injury in those sports is a hamstring strain. Mm-hmm. The most common in terms of the total lost time to play. So it's a big problem in those sports. And stretching beforehand is not going to totally eliminate the problem. It just has an ability to reduce that risk of sustaining a hamstring strain.
And I am told from people who have done that, either, you know, a serious injury or just a kind of a strain, it's really painful.
It's very painful. It's one of the more painful injuries. And the bigger problem is that when you have a muscle strain, particularly a hamstring strain, about 33% of the hamstring strains we see are recurrent injuries, meaning that athlete previously strained their hamstring. So maybe they didn't rehab it properly, or maybe we're not good at rehabbing it. We've actually just completed a study showing a new way of rehabbing hamstring strains where we've had actually no recurrences in about 50 athletes playing after returning to play for about a year or two, and it seems to be a pretty effective way of preventing the re-injuries.
Is there a way to describe that on the radio, since it looks like it's so effective?
Well, we put a place and emphasis on doing what we call eccentric contractions, but what is commonly referred to as the negative portion of a lift. So they do the negative portion of a muscle contraction, and they do it with their hamstrings in a lengthened position. And that's the difficult part. So that's where you need a physical therapist to actually show you how to do that. That's probably why we have high recurrences of these injuries, because we might come up with exercises that work, but teaching the person how to do that and providing the ability to do that is not that easy. So, yeah, it should be very difficult to explain across the phone.
How about just rest? I mean, let's say you do injure yourself. Maybe it's not a hamstring injury or a serious one, but just, you know, perhaps it's the sort of arthritis that comes with older age.
There are few, if any, injuries where rest is indicated for the treatment. In most situations, some type of exercise is going to be better than rest. The thing is that it has to be well-controlled exercise. So if you, if we stick on a muscle strain, you don't want to exercise it the day after. You don't want to be doing strenuous exercise. You'll do more harm than good. But you do want to start introducing some exercise early on after the injury. With someone with arthritis in the knee, getting on a stationary bicycle is going to be extremely beneficial for them, because it'll provide some lubrication to the knee and it'll provide some motion to avoid them from getting stiffness.
That's Mal McHugh, and we are talking about stretching before exercising or doing sports or athletics. And you can join the conversation, 1-888-477-9499. I see a bunch of email comments, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Brian from Ambler to join our conversation. And Brian, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I'm curious about... There's been some a lot of research over the last, 5-10 years about the effect of static stretching prior to weight training, high-intensity interval training, and its limits in the way it limits the ability for the body to produce power and force. The typical advocacy now being dynamic warm-ups. I'm just curious what your guest has to say about that.
In fact, I think he studied that. Yeah, you're a researcher on that. Mal, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because we hadn't touched on that yet. So, yes, if you do, 5 minutes of stretching of a particular muscle and then afterwards try to do a maximal contraction of that muscle, your strength and power will be depressed 5%, somewhere in that region. So you're less powerful, you're less strong. And there are hundreds of articles that have shown that.
Yeah.
So with those articles, the mantra was we shouldn't be doing static stretching because it reduces your strength. And so then people introduced dynamic stretching, which is a more active way of moving joints through their motion. And when you do dynamic stretching, you don't have this strength loss and power loss immediately afterwards. So teams, and lots of teams do it, do dynamic stretching. There are two issues there. The first is that most people are doing the stretching to avoid injury, and there's zero research to examine whether dynamic stretching will reduce the injury. The second thing is, okay, you want to avoid static stretching because it causes acute strength loss, but in all those studies, you measure strength, you stretch, then you measure strength again. In the real world, athletes will do an active warm-up, then they'll do their stretching, then they do their pre-participation exercises and drills, then they go into performance. And in that situation, that inhibitory effect of the stretching is washed out by doing some dynamic exercises afterwards. So it then becomes negligible when you actually go into your game situation. But if you're doing weightlifting, mm-hmm. you shouldn't go stretching immediately before you lift, you do a maximal bench press. It's not going to be beneficial. It's not going to increase your risk of injury. You're just not going to be as strong.
Brian, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Mal, I always forget if you have some kind of injury or pain, whether you use heat or cold or a combination of the two. Can you straighten that out for us?
If it's an acute injury, meaning you were feeling perfectly normal and all of a sudden you get a sharp shooting pain in a muscle or in a joint, you should use cold. You should not use heat. Heat will increase the injury response, increase the swelling and the inflammation. Cold will blunt that somewhat. So it's not heat, it's cold for an acute injury. With the more chronic injuries like low back pain, things like that, sometimes heat is indicated and you'll feel better. And you might, if it's an acute injury and you put heat on, you might feel better when the heat's on, but
right.
2 hours later you'll have more swelling.
We have an email from Andy. He says, is stretching necessary before a weight training gym workout? What do you think?
Not if you're executing it properly, you probably don't need to stretch before that. You need to do some type of warm-up. You can't go in cold, so stretching or warm-up will have the same benefits in terms of getting the muscles ready with the situation where if you stretch a lot, you'll be slightly weaker when you initiate the weight training program, but it's not going to affect the training adaptation. But weight training is a very exercise, a very controlled environment. People tend to injure themselves in uncontrolled environments where they make unanticipated movements, and then that's when the acute injury occurs.
We have an email from Drew. Says, what about the role of supplements like glucosamine and chondroitin in muscle and tendon health? Do you have a position on that?
Those are indicated for arthritic conditions where people with mild to moderate arthritis in the knee. The extent to which they work is debated. There's the biggest sort of meta-analyses of chondroitin and glucosamine show that it has a small to negligible effect, but for some patients it is beneficial. But that's primarily in the where people have arthritic damage in their joints. It's not going to be beneficial for tendon and muscle injuries.
Let me get Dana from looks like Drexel Hill to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Dana. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
A lot of research has been produced on the importance of stretching, especially during the aging process, and I'm specifically interested in what has been developed or discussed for non-athletes, specifically older men, because I feel like stretching has been a lot of a gendered issue, and I know it's a lot easier to discuss stretching with my mom than with my dad, so what suggestions or routines do you encourage men to participate in?
That's a great question, actually.
Go ahead, Mel.
Up to this point, I've been talking about pre-participation stretching, meaning what you do before you play your sport. But what you do for your general fitness is different. You should include stretching as part of a general flexibility program, and that becomes more and more important as you get older. Because as you get older, yes, we lose muscle mass, and we lose some strength, but our muscles also become shorter, so the range of motion in which we can execute tasks becomes smaller. So functionally, you have a limited functional range of motion across your joints. And if you initiate a lot of stretching as part of your general conditioning program, you can maintain the functional range of motion in your joints and improve their strength out in elongated positions so that you can actually function a little bit better. So as you get older, stretching does become more important. So yes, you should prescribe it. You should encourage it.
No, even if you're not playing basketball or soccer,
yes.
Or all of that.
Yeah.
I don't think I can get Ira on, but let me just ask Ira's question. What about rehabbing injuries between hip flexors, knee, et cetera? How does stretching play a role in this? Can you answer that, Mel?
Yes, stretching as part of the rehabilitation process can be very important depending on the injury and what we're trying to achieve. And hip flexor stretching, hamstring stretching, low back stretching are a standard part of treatment for various injuries like low back injuries, hip strains, things like that. So where we say stretching mightn't be good for this, that, or the other, as part of a rehab protocol, stretching is integral to most rehabilitations of soft tissue injuries.
Do you play sports, you yourself?
Yes, I do. I still play soccer and Gaelic football.
Oh, and Gaelic football? What is that, Gaelic football?
It's like a cross between basketball and soccer. We catch the ball, we kick it, we tackle people with our shoulders. It's more physical version of soccer.
Oh, interesting. And do you follow your own advice?
I do. Funny enough, my teams don't, so I end up doing my own warm-ups and my own stretching routines, but that's probably because I'm 20 years older than most of the people I'm playing with. And young people, so teenagers don't strain muscles that often, and there's some the aging population, so the weekend warrior who's say in their 30s and used to be a good athlete and still thinks they are a good athlete and wants to play at that level, that's the person that's at high risk of getting injured. So they need to do the stretching and all the other interventions to prevent injuries.
Well, Mel McHugh, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, rounding out our conversation.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Director of Research at the Nicholas Institute of Sports Medicine and Athletic Trauma, and that's at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York City. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program, how to download a podcast of the show, and much, much more. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, John Ahrens, and Liz Fiedler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be right back.